Recent,
Amarantha said, not needing to raise her voice to summon him. My heart became a leaden weight as those casual, strolling steps sounded from behind. They stopped when they were beside me, far too close for my liking. From the corner of my eye, I studied the High Lord of the Night Court as he bowed at the waist. Night still seemed to ripple off him, like some near-invisible cloak. Amarantha lifted her brows.
Is this the girl you saw at Tamlin's estate?
He brushed some invisible fleck of dust off his black tunic before he surveyed me. His violet eyes held boredom and disdain.
I suppose.
But did you or did you not tell me that girl?
Amarantha said, her tone sharpening as she pointed to Claire.
Was the one you saw.
He stuffed his hands into his pockets.
Humans all look alike to me.
Amarantha gave him a saccharine smile.
And what about fairies?
Reesend bowed again, so smooth it looked like a dance.
Among a sea of mundane faces, yours is a work of art.
Had I not been straddling the line between life and death, I might have snorted. Humans all look alike. I didn't believe him for a second. Reesend knew exactly how I looked. He'd recognized me that day at the manor. I willed my features into neutrality as Amarantha's attention again returned to me.
What's her name?
She demanded of Reesend.
How would I know? She lied to me.
Either toying with Amarantha was a joke to him, as much of a joke as impaling a head in Tamlin's garden, or it was just more court scheming. I braced myself for the scrape of those talons against my mind, braced myself for the order I was sure she was to give next. Still, I kept my lips sealed. I prayed Nesta had hired those scouts and guards, prayed she'd persuaded my father to take the precautions.
If you're inclined to play games, girl, then I suppose we can do this the fun way,
Amarantha said. She snapped her fingers at the Atter, who reached into the crowd and grabbed someone. Red hair glinted, and I jolted a step as the Atter yanked Lucian forward by the collar of his green tunic. No. No. Lucian thrashed against the Atter, but could do nothing against those needle-like nails as it forced him to his knees. The Atter smiled, releasing his tunic, but kept close. Amarantha flicked a finger in Reeson's direction. The High Lord of the Night Court lifted a groomed brow.
Hold his mind, she commanded.
My heart dropped to the floor. Lucian went utterly still, sweat gleaming on his neck as Reeson bowed his head to the queen and faced him. Behind them, pressing to the front of the crowd, came four tall red-haired High Fae. Toned and muscled, some of them looking like warriors about to set foot on a battlefield, some like pretty courtiers, they all stared at Lucian and grinned. The four remaining sons of the High Lord of the Autumn Court.
Her name, emissary?
Amarantha asked of Lucian. But Lucian only glanced at Tamlin before closing his eyes and squaring his shoulders. Reesend began smiling faintly, and I shuddered at the memory of what those invisible claws had felt like as they gripped my mind. How easy it would have been for him to crush it. Lucian's brothers lurked on the edges of the crowd. No remorse, no fear on their handsome faces. Amarantha sighed.
I thought you would have learned your lesson, Lucian. Though this time your silence will damn you as much as your tongue.
Lucian kept his eyes shut. Ready. He was ready for Reeson to wipe out everything he was, to turn his mind, his self, into dust.
Her name?
She asked Tamlin, who didn't reply. His eyes were fixed on Lucian's brothers, as if marking who was smiling the broadest. Amarantha ran a nail down the arm of her throne. I don't suppose your handsome brothers know Lucian, she purred.
If we did, lady, we would be the first to tell you, said the tallest.
He was lean, well-dressed, every inch of him a court-trained bastard. Probably the eldest, given the way even the ones who looked like born warriors stared at him with deference and calculation. And fear. Amarantha gave him a considering smile and lifted her hand. Recent cocked his head, his eyes narrowing slightly on Lucian. Lucian stiffened. A groan slipped out of him and, Feyre, I shouted. My name is Feyre. It was all I could do to keep from sinking to my knees as Amarantha nodded and Reason stepped back. He hadn't even removed his hands from his pockets. She must have allowed him more power than the others then, if he could still inflict such harm while leashed to her. Or else his power before she'd stolen it had been extraordinary for this to be considered the basest remnants. Lucian sagged on the ground, trembling. His brothers frowned, the eldest going so far as to bare his teeth at me in a silent snarl. I ignored him.
Feyre, Amarantha said, testing my name, the taste of the two syllables on her tongue. An old name. From our earlier dialects. Well, Feyre, she said.
I could have wept with relief when she didn't ask for my family name.
I promised you a riddle.
Everything became thick and murky. Why did Tamlin do nothing, say nothing? What had Lucian been about to say before he'd fled my cell?
Solve this, Feyre, and you and your High Lord and all his court may immediately leave with my blessing. Let's see if you are indeed clever enough to deserve one of our kind.
Her dark eyes shone, and I cleared my mind as best I could as she spoke.
There are those who seek me a lifetime, but we never meet, and those I kiss, but who trample me beneath ungrateful feet. At times, I seem to favor the clever and the fair, but I bless all those who are brave enough to dare. By large, my ministrations are soft-handed and sweet, but scorned, I become a difficult beast to defeat. For though each of my strikes lands a powerful blow, when I kill, I do it slow. I blinked, and she repeated herself, smiling when she finished, smug as a cat. My mind was void, a blank mass of uselessness. Could it be some sort of disease? My mother had died of typhus, and her cousin had died of malaria after going to Barat, but none of those symptoms seemed to match the riddle. Maybe it was a person? A ripple of laughter spread across those assembled behind us, the loudest from Lucian's brothers. Recent was watching me, wreathed in night and smiling faintly. The answer was so close. One little answer and we could all be free. Immediately, she'd said, as opposed to... Wait, had the conditions of my trials been different from those of the riddle? She'd emphasized immediately only when talking about solving the riddle. No, I couldn't think about that right now. I had to solve this riddle. We could all be free, free. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't even come up with a possibility. I'd be better off slitting my own throat and ending my suffering there before she could rip me to shreds. I was a fool, a common human idiot. I looked to Tamlin. The gold in his eyes flickered, but his face betrayed nothing. Think on it,
Amarantha said consolingly, and flicked a grin down at her ring, at the eye swiveling within.
When it comes to you, I'll be waiting. I gazed at Tamlin even as I was pulled away to the dungeons, my vacant mind reeling.
As they locked me in my cell once more, I knew I was going to lose.
I spent 2 days in that cell. Or at least I figured it was 2 days, based on the meal pattern I'd begun to work out. I ate the decent parts of the half-moldy food, and though I hoped for it, Lucian never came to see me. I knew better than to wish for Tamlin. I had little to do other than ponder Amarantha's riddle. The more I thought about it, the less sense it made. I dwelled on various kinds of poisons and venomous animals, and that yielded nothing beyond my growing sense of stupidity. Not to mention the nagging feeling that she might have wound up tricking me with this bargain when she'd emphasized immediately regarding the riddle. Maybe she meant she would not free us immediately after I finished her trials, that she could take however long she wanted. No. I was just being paranoid. I was overthinking it. But the riddle could free us all instantaneously. I had to solve it. While I'd sworn not to think too long on what tasks awaited me, I didn't doubt Amarantha's imagination, and I often awoke sweating and panting from my restless dreams. Dreams in which I was trapped within a crystal ring, forever silent and forced to witness their bloodthirsty, cruel world, cleaved from everything I'd ever loved. Amarantha had claimed there wouldn't be enough left of me to play with if I failed a trial, and I prayed that she hadn't lied. Better to be obliterated than to endure Durian's fate. Still, fear like nothing I had ever known swallowed me whole when my cell door opened and the red-skinned guards told me that the full moon had arisen. Chapter 36. The sounds of a teeming crowd reverberated against the passageway. My armed escort didn't bother with drawn weapons as they tugged me forward. I wasn't even shackled. Someone or something would catch me before I moved 3 feet and gut me where I stood. The cacophony of laughter, shouting, and unearthly howls worsened when the hall opened into what had to be a massive arena. There had been no attempt to decorate the torchlit cavern, and I couldn't tell if it had been hewn from the rock or if it was formed by nature. The floor was slick and muddy, and I struggled to keep my footing as we walked. But it was the enormous, riotous crowd that turned my insides cold as they stared at me. I couldn't decipher what they were shouting, but I had a good enough idea. Their cruel, ethereal faces and wide grins told me everything I needed to know. Not just lesser fairies, but high fae too, their excitement making their faces almost as feral as their more unearthly brethren. I was hauled toward a wooden platform erected above the crowd. Atop it sat Amarantha and Tamlin, and before it, I did my best to keep my chin high as I beheld the exposed labyrinth of tunnels and trenches running along the floor. The crowd stood along the banks, blocking my view of what lay within as I was thrown to my knees before Amarantha's platform. The half-frozen mud seeped into my pants. I rose on trembling legs. Around the platform stood a group of 6 males, secluded from the main crowd. From their cold, beautiful faces, from that echo of power still about them, I knew they were the other High Lords of Prithian. I ignored Rescind as soon as I noticed his feline smile, the corona of darkness around him. Amarantha had only to raise a hand, and the roaring crowd silenced.
It became so quiet that I could almost hear my heart beating.
Well, Feyre,
the fairy queen said. I tried not to look at the hand she rested on Tamlin's knee, that ring as vulgar as the gesture itself.
Your first task is here. Let us see how deep that human affection of yours runs.
I ground my teeth and almost exposed them to her. Tamlin's face remained blank.
I took the liberty of learning a few things about you,
Amarantha drawled.
It was only fair, you know.
Every instinct, every bit of me that was intrinsically human screamed to run, but I kept my feet planted, locking my knees to avoid them giving out.
I think you'll like this task, she said.
She waved a hand, and the adder stepped forward to part the crowd, clearing the way to the lip of a trench.
Go ahead. Look.
I obeyed. The trenches, probably 20 feet deep, were slick with mud. In fact, they seemed to have been dug from mud. I fought to keep my footing as I peered in farther. The trenches ran in a maze along the entire floor of the chamber, and their path made little sense. It was full of pits and holes, which undoubtedly led to underground tunnels, and hands slammed into my back, and I cried out as I had the sickening feeling of falling before being suddenly jerked up by a bone-hard grip. Up, up into the air. Laughter echoed through the chamber as I dangled from the adder's claws, its powerful wing beats booming across the arena. It swooped down into the trench and dropped me on my feet. Mud squelched, and I swung my arms as I teetered and slipped. More laughter, even as I remained upright. The mud smelled atrocious, but I swallowed my gag. I turned to find Amarantha's platform now floating to the lip of the trench. She looked down at me, smiling that serpent's grin.
Recent tells me you're a huntress, she said,
and my heartbeat faltered. He must have read my thoughts again, or maybe he'd found my family and... Amarantha flicked her fingers in my direction.
Hunt this.
The fairies cheered, and I saw gold flash between spindly, multi-hued palms. Betting on my life, on how long I would last once this started. I raised my eyes to Tamlin. His emerald gaze was frozen, and I memorized the lines of his face, the shape of his mask, the shade of his hair, one last time.
Release it, Amarantha called.
I trembled to the marrow of my bones as a great groaned, and then a slithering, swift-moving noise filled the chamber. My shoulders rose toward my ears. The crowd quieted to a murmur, silent enough to hear a guttural kind of grumble, so I could feel the vibrations in the ground as whatever it was rushed at me. Amarantha clicked her tongue, and I whipped my head to her. Her brows rose.
Run, she whispered.
Then it appeared. I ran. It was a giant worm, or what might have once been a worm had its front end not become an enormous mouth filled with ring after ring of razor-sharp teeth. It barreled toward me, its pinkish-brown body surging and twisting with horrific ease. These trenches were its lair, and I was dinner. Sliding and slipping on the reeking mud, I hurtled down the length of the trench, wishing I'd memorized more of the layout in the few moments I'd had, knowing full well that my path could lead to a dead end where I would surely... The crowd roared, drowning out the slurping and gnashing noises of the worm, but I didn't dare glance over my shoulder. The ever-nearing stench of it told me enough about how close it was. I didn't have the breath for a sob of relief as I found the fork in the pathway and veered sharply left. I had to get as much distance between us as possible. I had to find a spot where I could make a plan, a spot where I could find an advantage. Another fork. I veered left again, Perhaps if I took as many lefts as I could make a circle and somehow come up behind the creature and... No, that was absurd. I'd have to be thrice as fast as the worm, and right now I could barely keep ahead of it. I slid into a wall as I made another left and slammed into the slick mud. Cold, reeking, smothering. I wiped it from my eyes to find the leering faces of fairies floating above me, laughing. I ran for my life. I reached a straight, flat stretch of trench and threw my strength to my legs as I bolted down its course. I finally dared look over my shoulder, and my fear became wild and thrashing as the worm surged into the path, hot on my trail. I almost missed a slender opening in the side of the trench thanks to that look, and I gave up valuable steps as I skidded to a halt to squeeze myself through the gap. It was too small for the worm, but the creature could probably shatter through the mud. If not, its teeth could do the trick. But it was worth the risk. As I made to pull myself through, a force grabbed me back. No, not a force, but the walls. The crack was too small, and I'd so frantically thrown myself through it that I'd become wedged between it. My back to the worm, and too far between the walls to be able to turn, I couldn't see as it approached. The smell, though, the smell was growing worse. I pushed and pulled, but the mud was too slick and held fast. The trenches reverberated with the thunderous movements of the worm. I could almost feel its reeking breath upon my half-exposed body. Could hear those teeth slashing through the air, closer and closer. Not like this. It couldn't end like this. I clawed at the mud, twisting, tearing at anything to pull me through. The worm neared with each of my heartbeats, the smell nearly overpowering my senses. I ripped away mud, wriggling, kicking, and pushing, sobbing through my gritted teeth. Not like this. The ground shook. A stench wrapped right around me, and hot air slammed into my body. Its teeth clicked together. Grabbing onto the wall, I pulled and pulled. There was a squelch and a sudden release of pressure around my middle, and I fell through the crack, sprawling in the mud. The crowd sighed. I didn't have time for tears of relief as I found myself in another passageway, and I launched farther into the labyrinth. From the continuing quieted roars, I knew the worm had overshot me. But that made no sense. The passage offered no place to hide. It would have seen me stuck there. Unless it couldn't break through and was now taking some alternate route and would spring upon me. I didn't check my speed, though I knew I wasted momentum by smashing into wall after wall as I made each sharp turn. The worm also had to lose its speed making these bends. A creature that big couldn't take the turns without slowing, no matter how dexterous it might be. I risked a look at the crowd. Their faces were tight with disappointment and turned away entirely from me toward the other end of the chamber. That was where the worm had to be. That was where that passage had ended. It hadn't seen where I went. It hadn't seen me. It was blind. I was so surprised that I didn't notice the enormous pit that opened before me, hidden by a slight rise, and it was all I could do to not scream as I tumbled in. Air, empty air, and... I slammed into ankle-deep mud, and the crowd cried out. The mud softened the landing, but my teeth still sang with the impact. But nothing was broken. Nothing hurt. A few fairies peered in, leering from high above the gaping mouth of the pit. I whirled around, scanning my surroundings, trying to find the fastest way out. The pit itself opened into a small, dark tunnel, but there was no way to climb up. The wall was too steep. I was trapped. Gasping for breath, I fumbled a few steps into the blackness of the tunnel. I bit down on my shriek as something beneath my foot crunched hard. I staggered back, and my tailbone wailed in pain. I kept scrambling away, but my hand connected with something smooth and hard, and I lifted it to see a gleam of white. Through my muddy fingers, I knew that texture all too well. Bone. Twisting onto my hands and knees, I patted the ground, moving farther into the darkness. Bones, bones, bones of every shape and size, and I swallowed my scream as I realized what this place was. It was only when my hand landed on the smooth dome of a skull that I jumped to my feet. I had to get out, now.
Sarah?
I heard Amarantha's distant call.
You're ruining everyone's fun.
She said it as if I were a lousy shuttlecock partner.
Come out.
I certainly would not, but she told me what I needed to know. The worm didn't know where I was. It couldn't smell me. I had precious seconds to get out. As my sight adjusted to the darkness of the worm's den, mounds and mounds of bones gleamed, piles rolling away into the gloom. The chalkiness of the mud had to be from endless layers of them decomposing. I had to get out now, had to find a place to hide that wasn't a death trap. I stumbled out of the den, bones clattering away. Once more in the open air of the pit, I groped one of its steep walls. Several green-faced fairies barked curses at me, but I ignored them as I tried to scale the wall, made it an inch, and slid to the floor. I couldn't get out without a rope or a ladder, and plunging farther into the worm's lair to see if there was another way out wasn't an option. Of course, there was a back door. Every animal's den had two exits, but I wasn't about to risk the darkness, effectively blinding myself, and completely eliminate my small edge. I needed a way up. I tried scaling the wall again. The fairies were still murmuring their discontent. As long as they remained that way, I was fine. I again latched onto the muddy wall, digging into the pliable dirt. All I got was freezing mud digging beneath my nails as I slid to the ground yet again. The stench of the place invaded every part of me. I bit down on my nausea as I tried again and again. The fairies were laughing now.
A mouse in a trap, one of them said. Need a stepping stool? Another crowed.
A stepping stool. I whirled toward the piles of bones, then pushed my hand hard against the wall. It felt firm. The entire place was made of packed mud, and if this creature was anything like its smaller, harmless brethren, I could assume that the stench, and therefore the mud itself, was the remnant of whatever had passed through its system after it sucked the bones clean. Disregarding that wretched fact, I seized the spark of hope and grabbed the two biggest, strongest bones I could quickly find. Both were longer than my leg and heavy, so heavy as I jammed them into the wall. I didn't know what the creature usually ate, but it must have been at least cattle-sized.
What's it doing? What's it planning? One of the fairies hissed.
I grabbed a third bone and impaled it deep into the wall as high as I could reach. I grabbed a fourth, slightly smaller bone and set it into my belt, strapping it across my back. Testing the three bones with a few sharp tugs, I sucked in my breath, ignored the twittering fairies, and began climbing my ladder, my stepping stool. The first bone held firm, and I grunted as I grabbed the second bone step and pulled myself up. I was putting my foot on the step when another idea flashed, and I paused. The fairies, not too far off, began to shout again. But it could work. It could work if I played it right. It could work because it had to work. I dropped back to the mud, and the fairies watching me murmured their confusion. I drew the bone from my belt, and with a sharp intake of breath, I snapped it across my knee. My own bones burned with pain, but the shaft broke, leaving me with two sharp-ended spikes. It was going to work. If Amarantha wanted me to hunt, I would hunt. I walked to the middle of the pit opening, calculated the distance, and plunged the two bones into the ground. I returned back to the mound of bones and made quick work of whatever I could find that was sturdy and sharp. When my knee became too tender to use as a breaking point, I snapped the bones with my foot. One by one, I stuck them into the muddy floor beneath the pit opening until the whole area, save for one small spot, was filled with white lances. I didn't double-check my work. It would succeed, or I would wind up among those bones on the floor. Just one chance. That was all I had. Better than no chances at all. I dashed to my bone ladder and ignored the sting of the splinters in my fingers as I climbed to the third rung, where I balanced before embedding a fourth bone into the wall. And just like that, I heaved myself out of the pit mouth and almost wept to be exposed to the open air once more. I secured the three bones I'd taken in my belt, their weight a comforting presence, and rushed to the nearest wall. I grabbed a fistful of the reeking mud and smeared it across my face. The fairies hissed as I grabbed more, this time coating my hair, then my neck. Already accustomed to the staggering reek, my eyes watered only a little as I made swift work of painting myself. I even paused to roll on the ground. Every inch of me had to be covered, every damn inch. If the creature was blind, then it relied on smell, and my smell would be my greatest weakness. I rubbed mud on me until I was certain I was nothing more than a pair of blue-gray eyes. I doused myself a final time, my hands so slick that I could barely maintain a grasp on one of the sharp-ended bones as I drew it from my belt. "What's it doing?" the green-faced fairy whined again. A deep, elegant voice replied this time.
"She's building a trap,"
reasoned.
"But the Midden Guard
relies on its scent to see,"
reasoned answered, and I gave a special glower for him as I glanced at the rim of the trench and found him smiling at me.
"And Feyre just became invisible."
His violet eyes twinkled. I made an obscene gesture before I broke into a run, heading straight for the worm. I placed the remaining bones at especially tight corners, knowing well enough that I couldn't turn at the speed I hoped I would be running. It didn't take much to find the worm, as a crowd of fairies had gathered to taunt it, but I had to get to the right spot. I had to pick my battleground. I slowed to a stalking pace and flattened my back against a wall as I heard the slithering and grunting of the worm, the crunching. The fairies watching the worm, 10 of them with frosty blue skin and almond-shaped black eyes, giggled. I could only assume they'd grown bored of me and decided to watch something else die. Which was wonderful, but only if the worm was still hungry. Only if it would respond to the lure I offered. The crowd murmured and grumbled. I eased around a bend, craning my neck. Too covered in its scent to smell me, the worm continued feasting, stretching its bulbous form upward as one of the fairies dangled what looked like a hairy arm. The worm gnashed its teeth, and the blue fairies cackled as they dropped the arm into its waiting mouth. I recoiled around the bend and raised the bone sword I'd made. I reminded myself of the path I'd taken, of the turns I'd counted. Still, my heart lodged in my throat as I drew the jagged edge of the bone across my palm, splitting open my flesh. Blood welled, bright and shining as rubies. I let it build before clenching my hand into a fist. The worm would smell that soon enough. It was only then that I realized the crowd had gone silent. Almost dropping the bone, I leaned around the bend again to see the worm. It was gone. The blue fairies grinned at me. Then, shattering the silence like a shooting star, a voice, "Lucian's," bellowed across the chamber. "To your left!" I bolted, getting a few feet before the wall behind me exploded, mud spraying as the worm burst through, a mass of shredding teeth just inches away. I was already running, so fast that the trenches were a blur of reddish-brown. I needed a bit of distance or else it'd fall right on top of me. But I also needed it close so it couldn't check itself. So it was in a frenzy of hunger. I took the first sharp turn and grabbed onto the bone rail I'd embedded in the corner wall. I used it to swing around, not breaking my speed, propelling me faster, giving me a few more seconds on the worm. Then a left. My breath was a flame ravaging my throat. The second hairpin turn came upon me, and I again used a bit of bone to hurtle around the bend. My knees and ankles groaned as I fought to keep from slipping in the mud. Only one more turn, then a straight run. I flipped around the final turn, and the roar of the fairies became different than it had been earlier. The worm was a raging, crashing force behind me, but my steps were steady as I flew down the last passage. The mouth of the pit loomed, and with a final prayer, I leaped. There was only open black air, reaching up to swallow me. I swung my arms as I careened down, aiming for the spot I'd planned. Pain barked through my bones, my head, as I collided with the muddy ground and rolled. I flipped myself over and screamed as something hit my arm, biting through flesh. But I didn't have time to think, to even look at it, as I scrambled out of the way, as far into the darkness of the worm's den as I could get. I grabbed another bone and whirled when the worm plummeted into the pit. It hit the earth and lashed its massive body to the side, anticipating the strike to kill me, but a wet, crunching noise filled the air instead. And the worm didn't move. I squatted there, gulping down burning air, staring into the abyss of its flesh-shredding mouth, still open wide to devour me. It took me a few heartbeats to realize the worm wasn't going to swallow me whole, and a few more heartbeats to understand that it was truly impaled on the bone spikes. Dead. I didn't entirely hear the gasps, then the cheering. Didn't quite think or feel very much of anything as I edged around the worm and slowly climbed out of the pit, still holding the bone sword in my hand. Silently, still beyond words, I stumbled back through the labyrinth, my left arm throbbing, but my body tingled so much I didn't notice. But the moment I beheld Amarantha on her platform at the edge of the trench, I clenched my free hand. "Prove my love." Pain shot through my arm, but I embraced it. I had won. I looked up at her from beneath lowered brows and didn't check myself as I exposed my teeth. Her lips were thin, and she no longer grasped Tamlin's knee. Tamlin. My Tamlin. I tightened my grip on the long bone in my hand. I was shaking, shaking all over, but not with fear. Oh no, it wasn't fear at all. I'd proved my love, and then some.
"Well," Amarantha said with a little smirk, "I suppose anyone could have done that."
I took a few running steps and hurled the bone at her with all my remaining strength. It embedded itself in the mud at her feet, splattering filth onto her white gown, and remained there, quivering. The fairies gasped again, and Amarantha stared at the wobbling bone before touching the mud on her bodice. She smiled slowly. "Naughty," she tisked. Had there not been an insurmountable trench between us, I would have ripped her throat out. Someday, if I lived through this, I would skin her alive.
"I suppose you'll be happy to learn most of my court lost a good deal of money tonight," she said, picking up a piece of parchment. I looked at Tamlin as she scanned the paper. His green eyes were bright, and though his face was deathly pale, I could have sworn there was a ghost of triumph on his face. "Let's see," Amarantha went on, reading the paper as she toyed with Jurian's finger bone at the end of her necklace. "Yes, I'd say almost my entire court bet on you dying within the first minute. Some said you'd last 5, and..." She turned over the paper. "And just one person said you would win." Insulting, but not surprising. I didn't fight as the adder hauled me out of the trenches, dumping me at the foot of the platform before flying off. My arm burned at the impact. Amarantha frowned at her list, and she waved a hand. "Take her away. I tire of her mundane face." She clenched the arms of her throne hard enough that the whites of her knuckles showed. "Reesend, come here." I didn't stay long enough to see the High Lord prowl forward. Red hands grabbed me, holding tightly to keep from sliding off. I'd forgotten the mud caked on me like a second skin. As they yanked me away, a shooting pain shot along my arm, and agony blanketed my senses. I looked at my left forearm then, and my stomach rose at the trickling blood and ripped tendons, at the lips of my skin pulled back to accommodate the shaft of a bone shard protruding clean through it. I couldn't even glance back at Tamlin. Couldn't find Lucian to say thank you before pain consumed me whole, and I could barely manage to walk back to my cell. Chapter 37. No one, not even Lucian, came to fix my arm in the days following my victory. The pain overwhelmed me to the point of screaming whenever I prodded the embedded bit of bone, and I had no other option but to sit there, letting the wound gnaw on my strength, trying my best not to think about the constant throbbing that shot sparks of poisoned lightning through me. But worse than that was the growing panic, panic that the wound hadn't stopped bleeding. I knew what it meant when blood continued to flow. I kept one eye on the wound, either out of hope that I'd find the blood clotting, or the terror that I'd spy the first signs of infection. I couldn't eat the rotten food they gave me. The sight of it aroused such nausea that a corner of my cell now reeked of vomit. It didn't help that I was still covered in mud, and the dungeon was perpetually freezing. I was sitting against the far wall of my cell, savoring the coolness of the stone beneath my back. I'd awoken from a fitful sleep and found myself burning hot, a kind of fire that made everything a bit muddled. My injured arm dangled at my side as I gazed dully at the cell door. It seemed to sway, its lines rippling. This heat in my face was some kind of small cold, not a fever from infection. I put a hand on my chest, and dried mud crumbled into my lap. Each of my breaths was like swallowing broken glass. Not a fever. Not a fever. Not a fever. My eyelids were heavy, stinging. I couldn't go to sleep. I had to make sure the wound wasn't infected. I had to.
too.
The door actually did move then. No, not the door, but rather the darkness around it, which seemed to ripple. Real fear coiled in my stomach as a male figure formed out of that darkness, as if he'd slipped in from the cracks between the door and the wall, hardly more than a shadow. Reesend was fully corporeal now, and his violet eyes glowed in the dim light. He slowly smiled from where he stood by the door.
What a sorry state for Tamlin's champion.
Go to hell, I snapped,
but the words were little more than a wheeze.
My head was light and heavy all at once. If I tried to stand, I would topple over. He stalked closer with that feline grace and dropped into an easy crouch before me.
He sniffed, grimacing at the corner splattered with my vomit.
I tried to bring my feet into a position more inclined for scrambling away or kicking him in the face, but they were full of lead. Reesend cocked his head. His pale skin seemed to radiate alabaster light. I blinked away the haze, but couldn't even turn aside my face as his cold fingers grazed my brow.
What would Tamlin say, he murmured, if he knew his beloved was rotting away down here, burning up with fever?
Not that he can even come here, not when his every move is watched.
I kept my arm hidden in the shadows. The last thing I needed them to know was how weak I was.
Get away, I said, and my eyes stung as the words burned my throat. I had difficulty swallowing.
He raised an eyebrow.
I come here to offer you help, and you have the nerve to tell me to leave?
Get away, I repeated.
My eyes were so sore that it hurt to keep them open.
You made me a lot of money, you know. I figured I would repay the favor.
I leaned my head against the wall. Everything was spinning. Spinning like a top, spinning like...
I kept my nausea down. Let me see your arm, he said too quietly.
I kept my arm in the shadows, if only because it was too heavy to lift.
Let me see it.
A growl rippled from him. Without waiting for my reaction, he grabbed my elbow and forced my arm into the dim light of the cell. I bit my lip to keep from crying out, bit it hard enough to draw blood as rivers of fire exploded inside me, as my head swam and all my senses narrowed down to the piece of bone sticking through my arm. They couldn't know how bad it was because they would use it against me.
Reesend examined the wound, a smile appearing on his sensuous lips.
Oh, that's wonderfully gruesome.
I swore at him and he chuckled.
Such words from a lady.
Get out, I wheezed. My frail voice was as terrifying as the wound.
Don't you want me to heal your arm?
His fingers tightened around my elbow. At what cost? I shot back, but kept my head against the stone, needing its damp strength.
Ah, that. Living among fairies has taught you some of our ways.
I focused on the feeling of my good hand on my knee, focused on the dry mud beneath my fingernails.
I'll make a trade with you, he said casually,
and gently set my arm down. As it met with the floor, I had to close my eyes to brace against the flow of that poisoned lightning.
I'll heal your arm in exchange for you. For 2 weeks every month, 2 weeks of my choosing, you'll live with me at the Night Court, starting after this messy three trials business.
My eyes flew open. No.
I'd already made one fool's bargain. No?
He braced his hands on his knees and leaned closer.
Really?
Everything was starting to dance.
Get out, I breathed.
You'd turn down my offer? And for what?
I didn't reply, so he went on.
You must be holding out for one of your friends, for Lucian, correct? After all, he healed you before, didn't he? Oh, don't look so innocent. The Adder and his cronies broke your nose, so unless you have some kind of magic you're not telling us about, I don't think human bones heal that quickly.
His eyes sparkled, and he stood, pacing a bit.
The way I see things, Feyre, you have two options. The first and the smartest would be to accept my offer.
I spat at his feet, but he kept pacing, only giving me a disapproving look.
The second option, and the one only a fool would take, would be for you to refuse my offer and place your life, and thus Tamlin's, in the hands of chance.
He stopped pacing and stared hard at me. Though the world spun and danced in my vision, something primal inside me went still and cold beneath that gaze.
Let's say I walk out of here. Perhaps Lucian will come to your aid within 5 minutes of my leaving. Perhaps he'll come in 5 days. Perhaps he won't come at all. Between you and me, he's been keeping a low profile after his rather embarrassing outburst at your trial. Amarantha's not exactly pleased with him. Tamlin even broke his delightful brooding to beg for him to be spared. Such a noble warrior, your High Lord. She listened, of course, but only after she made Tamlin bestow Lucian's punishment. 20 lashes.
I started shaking, sick all over again to think about what it had to have been like for my High Lord to be the one to punish his friend. Reeson shrugged. A beautiful, easy gesture.
So it's really a question of how much you're willing to trust Lucian, and how much you're willing to risk for it. Already you're wondering if that fever of yours is the first sign of infection. Perhaps they're unconnected, perhaps not. Maybe it's fine. Maybe that worm's mud isn't full of festering filth. And maybe Amarantha will send a healer, and by that time you'll either be dead, or they'll find your arm so infected that you'll be lucky to keep anything above the elbow.
My stomach tightened into a painful ball.
I don't need to invade your thoughts to know these things. I already know what you've slowly been realizing.
He again crouched in front of me.
You're dying.
My eyes stung, and I sucked my lips into my mouth.
How much are you willing to risk on the hope that another form of help will come?
I stared at him, sending as much hate as I could into my gaze.
He'd been the one who'd caused all this. He'd told Amarantha about Claire. He'd made Tamlin beg. Well?
I bared my teeth. Go to hell. Swift as lightning, he lashed out, grabbing the shard of bone in my arm and twisting. A scream shattered out of me, ravaging my aching throat. The world flashed black and white and red. I thrashed and writhed, but he kept his grip, twisting the bone a final time before releasing my arm. Panting, half sobbing as the pain reverberated through my body, I found him smirking at me again. I spat in his face. He only laughed as he stood, wiping his cheek with the dark sleeve of his tunic.
This is the last time I'll extend my assistance, he said, pausing by the cell door. Once I leave this cell, my offer is dead. I spat again, and he shook his head. I bet you'll be spitting on Death's face when she comes to claim you too.
He began to ripple with darkness, his edges blurring into endless night. He could be bluffing, trying to trick me into accepting his offer. Or he might be right. I might be dying. My life depended on it. More than my life depended on my choice. And if Lucian was indeed unable to come, or if he came too late. I was dying. I'd known it for some time now. And Lucian had underestimated my abilities in the past, had never quite grasped my limitations as a human. He'd sent me to hunt the Suriel with a few knives and a bow. He'd even admitted to hesitating that day when I had screamed for help. And he might not even know how bad off I was, might not understand the gravity of an infection like this. He might come a day, an hour, a minute too late. Reason's moon-white skin began to darken into nothing but shadow.
Wait.
The darkness consuming him paused. For Tamlin. For Tamlin, I would sell my soul. I would give up everything I had for him to be free.
Wait,
I repeated. The darkness vanished, leaving Reason in his solid form as he grinned.
Yes?
I raised my chin as high as I could manage. Just 2 weeks? Just 2 weeks, he purred and knelt before me. 2 teensy tiny weeks with me every month is all I ask.
Why? And what are to be the terms,
I said, fighting past the dizziness. Ah, he said, adjusting the lapel of his obsidian tunic. If I told you those things, there'd be no fun in it, would there? I looked at my ruined arm. Lucian might never come, might decide I wasn't worth risking his life any further, not now that he'd been punished for it. And if Amarantha's healers cut off my arm? Nesta would have done the same for me, for Elaine. And Tamlin had done so much for me, for my family. Even if he had lied about the treaty, about sparing me from its terms, he'd still saved my life that day against the Naga, and saved it again by sending me away from the manor. I couldn't think entirely of the enormity of what I was about to give, or else I might refuse again. I met Reason's gaze.
5 days.
You're going to bargain?
Reason laughed under his breath.
10 days.
I held his stare with all my strength.
1 week.
Reason was silent for a long moment, his eyes traveling across my body and my face before he murmured,
1 week it is.
Then it's a deal,
I said. A metallic taste filled my mouth as magic stirred between us. His smile became a bit wild, and before I could brace myself, he grabbed my arm. There was a blinding, quick pain, and my scream sounded in my ears as bone and flesh were shattered. Blood rushed out of me, and then...
Reason was still grinning when I opened my eyes. I hadn't any idea how long I'd been unconscious, but my fever was gone, and my head was clear as I sat up.
In fact, the mud was gone, too. I felt as if I'd just bathed. But then I lifted my left arm.
What have you done to me?
Reason stood, running a hand through his short, dark hair.
It's custom in my court for bargains to be permanently marked upon flesh.
I rubbed my left forearm and hand, the entirety of which was now covered in swirls and whorls of black ink. Even my fingers weren't spared, and a large eye was tattooed in the center of my palm. It was feline, and its slitted pupil stared right back at me.
Make it go away,
I said, and he laughed.
You humans are truly grateful creatures, aren't you?
From a distance, the tattoo looked like an elbow-length lace glove, but when I held it close to my face, I could detect the intricate depictions of flowers and curves that flowed throughout to make up a larger pattern. Permanent. Forever.
You didn't tell me this would happen.
You didn't ask.
So how am I to blame?
He walked to the door but lingered.